Just Another Review Podcast, sponsored by Me and Ed's Pizza Parlor.
Sponsored by Me and Ed's Pizza. If you want a fucking cracker, give us a shout.
I like this and you like that. It's Just Another Review Podcast. We pick a show, sit down and chat. Now listen to the start of our show, because it's now.
Hello and welcome to Just Another Review Podcast. I'm one of your two hosts, Sean.
And I'm the other half, Ross. Sean and I have been friends since the 1980s.
Yeah, and you still laughed like that even back then.
And for this podcast, we review stuff.
Like the first episode of a new streaming show and a movie from our childhood. And then we let you know if you should watch it or avoid it.
Dunk it or dump it?
That's good. I like that.
Thank you.
Now with that, Russell, what are we reviewing this week?
Well, we're looking at the Netflix romantic comedy series, Dash and Lily. And a little spoiler alert, because we are looking at a fairy tale romance, our media rewind will be 1993's film True Romance.
Oh, man, am I excited for that?
Yes. So
no, True Dash Romance and Lily. I'm excited for Dash and Lily.
Well, I would hope so. And Clarence in Alabama.
Mm.
So the credits of Dash and Lily, let's look at our two main stars. It stars Austin Abrams as Dash and Midori Francis as Lily. Executive producers, there's a Jonas brother in there, so that's pretty exciting. And also the guys that brought you Stranger Things. So, little tick on that box. The series creator is Joe Trask. He's a Broadway guy, and it's based on the book by Rachel Cohn and David Levithan. And so they've done a series of books about Dash and Lily, and they also wrote Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist, which is a movie with Michael Cera.
Oh, that is not one I have seen.
Okay.
Have you seen it?
I believe I saw it when it first came out, but I could not tell you what happened whatsoever. Okay. Dash and Lily, episode one. Are you ready, Sean?
Where would we watch this show if we wanted to watch it?
Well, you'd watch it on the biggest, most popular streaming platform, the Netflix.
Netflix, right. I think either I wasn't listening close enough or you didn't say it. I think you...
That's okay. I mean, I don't think people don't say I'm watching TV anymore. They say I'm watching the Netflix.
Right. It's like Netflix and chilling.
If you have to blow your nose, you use a Kleenex. And if you have to chill, you watch the Netflix.
Did you say that because I keep picking my nose on camera here?
No, I'm not watching you. Oh. I'm just looking at myself.
So this is kind of like a teenage, I don't know, rom-com?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's get into it.
Well, okay. Now, before we get
you don't want to.
No, I actually don't. But before we get into it, why'd you make me watch this? I'd like to know. I'm not upset. I was at first, I'll be honest, but I was like, why is he making me watch this?
Right.
And then you kind of told me, but why don't you tell everybody else, out of everything on Netflix that we could watch, probably wouldn't watch this on my own unless you made me, like you did.
Yeah.
Why did you pick Dash and Lily?
Well, again, Netflix is the probably the top streaming service. It's definitely seems like it's a vehicle that Netflix is pushing right now. We are recording this in December, very close to Christmas, and Dash and Lily is a very much Christmas themed show. And it's getting a lot of good reviews too. I think it's almost got 100% Rotten Tomato score as well. So it's popular. People enjoy it. We've only watched one episode. And for this podcast that we're doing, we're not always going to pick the one that's tailored for the male audience. I want to try a lot of different styles and themes of shows.
That's fair. And after you kind of explained that to me, I was a little upset because I was like, I'm not going to watch this on my own or pick this. Why are we reviewing this? I wouldn't watch this. And then, you made some good points. So I dropped all my reservations and went all in to Dash and Lily. I thought it was payback for the Liberator, maybe at first. But I went all in.
Dash and Lily, episode one. titled Dash. Act one of the first episode, it mainly takes place at The Strand, a real bookstore in New York City. It's on December 17th, and we meet cynical loner Dash as he visits The Strand bookstore in New York City. He uncovers a red notebook left behind by a mysterious girl that sets him on a scavenger hunt throughout the store. He uncovers clues to fill in the blanks and is left with a message: are you going to be lonely on Christmas?
Right, right. Now, right off the bat, I can't really relate to Dash because he's in a bookstore.
He's too good looking.
You know me. I don't read. It must be my ADD or whatever. I don't know. I tried to get into reading. I just never can. You've always been a good reader. You like to get lost in a good book, right?
I enjoy a good fantasy novel. I wouldn't say I'm the best reader, but I do like a good book.
Yeah, more but, so than me.
You're more of a visual medium type guy.
Yeah, I mean, I start reading and then I get lost and I daydream. Like, they might mention something and my mind will go off on a tangent, and all of a sudden I've visually looked at four, five pages, but I haven't retained any of it because I've been off in La La Land thinking about something else. And it happened so often to me that I just, you know, I never, you know, it's rarely that I get into a good book. I like user manuals, believe it or not.
To be able to put together your audio video needs?
Yeah. You know what? That's like the first thing I do when I get something is I read my user manual front to back before I even turn on whatever piece of equipment or technology I've got. So I know everything about it. And I actually, I know it's really weird. I actually enjoy reading my user manual. So.
Well, you're good. I would never read my user manual. I don't normally buy anything that's any more complicated than plug in or put batteries in. But I tend not to read a user manual. Nor do I tend to look at directions. I just go places.
And that's why my phone rings a little bit more than normal. Is people, not Russ in particular, but people that don't read their user manuals normally call me to figure out how to work something. And my first response is, read your user manual, please. And then you can call me back.
You're like IT support.
Yeah. No.
One thing I like about this first act is it references a lot of books and a song. And I think if you do a little bit of a deep dive in those references, you kind of get an idea of what this series is going to be about, or definitely what I believe the series is going to be about after watching the first episode. So one of the first things Dash references Gabriel Garcia Marquez, which is a biography. And now, so I don't know anything about Gabriel, but when I do a little Wikipedia search, he is an acclaimed nonfiction works, and he is most notable for popularizing a literary style known as magic realism. So which uses a magical elements and events in otherwise ordinary and realistic situations. And if I needed to kind of explain what Dash and Lily is about, I feel like it's definitely going to be magical realism.
Magical realism.
Yes.
Is that a little bit like hyper realism? No, hyper realism is like super realistic, right?
Sure.
You know, if I've got a hyper-realism video game, it's next to the real thing, right? So what is magical realism?
I think you have to, you know, if in order to believe in magic, you have to let go of reality a little bit. And you have to get lost in the idea and the concept that they're portraying in front of you. And you just have to believe in magic. So I think, and usually with romantic comedies and usually with the season of Christmas, magical realism is a really good kind of fantasy storytelling.
Do you believe in magic?
Do you believe in magic? I hope
like
you do.
What is magic? You know, is magic the illusion and the is it the illusion or is magic actually like wizards and magic? You know what I mean? There's magicians and then there's wizards, and both technically do magic.
Right.
But there's a difference. Would you say?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't.
So, what magic are we talking about? Are we talking about magician magic? Or are we talking about wizard magic?
your wizard, Harry.
Or have I totally gone off the deep end on magic?
I think we're talking about magician magic, like the mysterious supernatural forces bringing two people together when there's no real, there's so much coincidence of bringing two people together, you can only believe in the idea of magic.
Okay, wizard magic then.
Yeah, yeah. Someone's casting a charm spell.
I just wanted to make it known we're talking about wizard magic here.
Yeah, so there's a 12th level wizard hiding in the Strand, just kind of like
rolling dice. Back there,
yeah, using some magic spells. Yeah, so that's the first reference that I feel like, okay, you take a little bit of understanding of who Gabriel Garcia Marquez is, and you're like, okay, I get it. So a nice call to this author who definitely relies on magical realism. My Dash and Lily is that too. They diss James Patterson, which is again, I didn't know who he was, but he's a very successful thriller romance novelist. So again, we're watching a romantic comedy here.
Yeah, all these references went obviously over my head. I kind of set myself up for that before we start talking here. But yeah, so even though there was some of these references and stuff I didn't quite catch and over my head, I was still enjoying what I was watching.
Yeah. No, Dash is a very charismatic character, and there's just a light airiness to everything that happens at the Strand. It's quite fun to watch.
Yeah, let's talk about his hair.
Okay.
You know, he's got amazing hair. He's got just this great flow. And I noticed the older I get, the more jealous I get of people with really great flow. And this kid's got some great flow, man.
Back in your day, you had great flow. We would never walk past a mirror where you didn't stop, look at the mirror for a good 20 seconds with a duck face and just kind of put your fingers through your hair and just kind of combed it back.
It had to be perfect. Yet no matter how much I fiddled with it, it probably looked exactly the same as when I started fiddling with it, eh? But just the whole self-conscious teenage... whatever. My hair had to be perfect, and it wasn't.
You had a good flow back then.
I had good hair. Yeah, it was never thick, but it was good, you know. So, anyways, this kid's got a good head of hair.
This kid's got a good head of hair, and hopefully he has that for the rest of his life and doesn't follow down your footsteps.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, kid, take care of your hair. Don't wear a hat too much, and you know, don't twirl your hair in your finger and then rip it out of your head in math class and make a big patch in the back of your head, because that shit just won't ever grow back.
Words to live by.
And then Melissa Devereaux would draw on it.
She would draw on the back of your head?
Yeah.
In your little bald spot in the back of your head?
Yeah, in math class.
I think she liked you.
Oh, she definitely did. What wasn't there to like about a young Sean? Glasses, braces, brains. The whole package.
Brains.
Yeah.
The act kind of ends as well with Dash talking through a Joni Mitchell song, River. And the song is about a breakup of a romantic relationship, which again perils Dash's character, who's just kind of breaking up, or I guess still feeling the breakup from his last girlfriend, which I think you believe, based on what we saw in the first episode, that was almost a year ago.
Yeah, it was. That's what they keep mentioning, that he broke up with his girlfriend last year, probably just after the Christmas break last year. Because there's a flashback of him and her.
Still pained about it. Yeah, and you can tell that he's still pained by it. You can tell that he's got these defense mechanisms.
Oh, I'm sorry. Again, I
watch the flashback?
Did you see the flashback of his girlfriend?
If it was in episode one, I definitely did.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Did I see?
I don't think you see what I'm getting at. You'd be depressed too if that was your ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, but vice versa. I mean, these guys really missed out on each other.
So I'm going to leapfrog off that. If anyone didn't kind of guess what I was getting at, is she was this really very attractive girl. Supposed to be a high school girl, but I mean, she looks like she's in her early 20s. And again, these kids are supposed to be in high school. He meets another high school friend. They're on their high school break. And then his flashback is from a year ago. So that means he was at the earliest in grade 11, and he's got this 25-year-old looking Brazilian you know, skin French model girlfriend. Anyway, she looks nothing like she could be 15, 16 years old.
No,
I'm getting at here is these are supposed to be high school kids, and high school kids don't talk like this.
No.
These kids have this extended vocabulary. They're all their parents have ditched them for Christmas. Anyways, this Dash main character, his both of his parents have sort of done other things for Christmas. They're these, I don't know, what would you say? From what I can tell, maybe more of like an upper class New York kids. But anyways,
they're not very
relatable,
that's for sure.
In a sense that maybe this is where your magical realism comes in.
Yeah. You need to get rid of the parents.
Yeah, they're not very grounded in reality. At least they don't act or talk like any high school kids I've ever witnessed before.
No.
And now the point that I'm taking so long to get to is no one ever gets high school kids right.
Right.
Who gets high school? I mean, like Saved by the Bell, they all looked like they were 20 years old. Dawson's Creek, Dawson was like, he talked like a 40-year-old scientist, you know. and 90210, I mean, when we started watching that, weren't they supposed to be like in grade 9? They did like 3 years of high school. And you've got Luke Perry, God rest his soul, by the way, you know, who looks like he's 25 years old and he's supposed to be in grade 9 in the first season. Like, nobody gets high school kids right. And this show is no exception to that.
And Andrea was like in her 30s already when she was now 2-0.
It's a fucking grandma.
Yeah. No offense to anyone in their 30s. Okay, I got two movies. I got two movies for you that did it right. Are you ready?
Okay.
Kids.
Okay.
Here we go. That's definitely that they did something right there. But no, more recently, if you can, and it's on Amazon Prime as far as I know, but Eighth Grade. Did you see Eighth Grade?
No, I didn't. No.
Oh, you've got it's about a single dad and his daughter, and she's in the eighth grade. And yeah, it's very down to earth. It's written as if she had a vocabulary of someone in eighth grade, which we also talk as we have vocabularies in eighth grade. But yes, I recommend Eighth Grade if you can check that out. It's probably about a year old.
Will do.
Do it. This is my recommendation to everyone.
So now we finished this first act, and to be honest with you, I'm kind of digging the show. I didn't understand the book, and I'm kind of mad at you for this because I didn't want to like this show. Yeah. And here I am. Here I am. Look at me. I'm a high school teenager now as well, with my voice cracking. I'm intrigued. I want to keep watching this. This is an interesting show.
You know what it is? It's the magical realism.
Must be. It must be the magic.
You're getting hooked. It's the
wizard magic. So
let's move on. It's the wizard magic.
You're a wizard, Harry.
Act two, Dash visits his friend Boomer at the Two Boots, which I guess the Two Boots, I don't know if I know the Strand is real. I don't know if the Two Boots is real, but Two Boots looks like a pizza store, pizza restaurant, as they call it. And then he ends up back at his dad's with a pepperoni pizza, watching a French film and mourning his ex-girlfriend, Sophia.
Drinking his dad's brandy.
Again,
he pours a healthy glass of brandy for a high schooler. I don't even think brandy drinkers pour a healthy glass like that. And this kid, he's a veteran. He's a high school brandy drinking veteran.
The only hard alcohol I drank as a high schooler was banana liqueur. Because you're just used to popping juice. Like, how can you?
That is 100% not true.
That's true, right? We did.
Do you know how I know this?
No. Okay.
Because we used to steal liquor from my parents' liquor cabinet. Oh, remember Tanqueray? That disgusting gin? It tastes like pine needles.
Did you fill it up with water after we were done?
So no one would ever know? I don't think so. My parents didn't drink hard alcohol. It was all for their friends anyways. So we were in the clear. We never got busted.
No.
We are now. Sorry, Mom and Dad. But we dipped into your alcohol stash. So this pizza place, it's like right beside the bookstore?
Is this is question get, mark. I didn't catch on to that. No, I don't know.
I think so. I think you could walk geography. Right into the bookstore from it. It seemed like it anyways.
Yeah. It's quite possible. They might be, maybe it's just all, everything happens in one block radius. It's quite possible.
Now, bookstores I can't relate to, but pizza places I sure can relate to.
Oh, did you ever work at a pizza place?
Did I work at many pizza places? I think I've got three or four under my belt. Oh, yeah. And one of them, me and you worked at, was it not?
We worked at Me and Ed's Pizza. I think there's a few Me and Ed's here in BC, over here in West Coast Canada, but there's also, I think they've got a pretty big chain in California too.
Okay.
So it's not a complete local reference.
For anyone that doesn't know what Me and Ed, it's not your traditional sort of Little Caesars, Panagopoulos pizza. It's a very specialty thin crust pizza. It was very pricey for what it was.
I once got a phone call from an upset customer who said, I just remember him saying, if I wanted a cracker with cheese, I would have made myself a cracker and cheese.
the cracker guy. Well, don't order the thin crust pizza if you don't want a cracker.
If you don't want, exactly. I worked in the kitchen, and Sean, you were a delivery driver, and you kind of worked in the back as well.
Yeah, the delivery drivers did food prep when you weren't doing delivery, and you did... You made pizzas and answered the phones and stuff.
And I would usually make your lunches.
You would make my lunch. And I remember one time you made my meal for me. I was so hungry.
You're welcome.
I'd probably done so many deliveries, busted my butt, made everybody else that was working that night look like a rock star, I'm sure. Including Russ. And he ruined my pizza. What'd you do to my pizza, man?
I hid a couple anchovies in there. The good thing with as a thin cut crust rises, you kind of have a little poker. So you open up the oven and you poke the dough so it doesn't push all the ingredients off the pizza. And then, when you bring the pizza out, they usually have these little holes in the crust that you can shove little secrets in, little treasures.
Yes,
and,
there was a couple secrets in
it. Anchovy treasures.
It was disgusting.
And Sean, you know, like Sean does, he just laughs things off and says, "Good one, Russ." And then we continue.
I'm sure I laughed it off.
He doesn't get upset or.
No, I just make a list. I've got a list going, and one day I'm gonna act. One day I'm gonna act out on this list, and they just don't know when.
And maybe each episode you could just say one of those items on the list. So this is one. So next episode, I'd like to hear another item on this list.
All right. I got the Chinese food story all ready for the next one.
I can't wait.
Me and Ed's is great. I'll tell you, you know, word to the wise, it's awesome working with your buddies. But if you're in the food industry, don't ever let them make your food.
Right.
Yeah. Because
just another review podcast sponsored by Me and Ed's Pizza Parlor.
Sponsored by Me and Ed's Pizza. If you want a fucking cracker, give us a shout.
All right. Act three and the last act.
Wait. I got to see if have you got all your notes out? I think I slipped a note. Yeah.
You slipped a note.
Well, I mean, I've got a couple notes in here that I slipped up into the first part.
So what's this in my pocket? Oh, it's a note you slipped.
What does it
say?
It says, let's move on.
Act three, what a fun romantic game. That's not my notes. Now you've completely screwed me up. Okay.
Game on.
So here we go. Act three, game on. So now we're one day later on December 18th, and Dash is interested in the identity of Clue Girl, who's left the red notebook. He says he's all in, and he leaves instructions in the notebook to draw the mysterious girl into Two Boots, the pizza parlor, so Boomer can run a sting operation, figure out who this girl is. Unfortunately, the sting is unsuccessful because Dash leaves, and Boomer has a long lineup, and she comes in and out really quickly. So he doesn't catch her, but she leaves another challenge for him, which Dash now has to get Santa's hat at the Macy's department store. And he does this. We don't really see how he does this, but he goes into the store, and then I think there's maybe some it's implied that he fights Santa, and then he gets kicked out of the store, and he opens up looks under the brim, and it's embroidered Lily on the Santa hat. And that's how the first episode ends.
Right. So I like this Dash kid at first.
Oh, now you don't like him because he beat up Santa?
Yeah. Who goes into a department store in front of a bunch of kids and beats up Santa Claus?
Now, I think there's a lot of implication there, and we don't know for sure.
You're right.
We don't know.
But that's what they led us to believe.
Yeah.
So they want us to believe that he maybe accosted good old Saint Nick.
And I wouldn't put it past him. He looks like he's a type of guy who might, I don't know. He also feels like a sensitive type. He might, he might look at those kids' faces.
At the same time, he doesn't seem to care about too much at all, other than...
Well, he's got a broken heart.
It was a year ago.
Yeah, but it's hard.
That's true. Sophia was a 10, and looking at this kid, I think that was his last go at a 10.
Yeah.
Probably just because she didn't know any better, and she maybe didn't have as many options for high school.
I'm just kidding, Dash.
Look at me. I'm being a jerk. It's because your hair. I hate your fucking hair, man.
I'm jealous of it.
I want your flow. I can have it. You can't have it.
I want your flow. I love you, boy. Potato and mustard.
So Lily is this girl's name.
Lily is the girl's name. And we don't meet Lily. I should say that both episodes are kind of, or sorry, both episodes, this first episode is bookmarked briefly by two market scenes, one in the beginning, one in the end. And we get the idea that probably Dash and Lily have this kind of unbeknownst encounter. They don't really make eye contact. Well, maybe they do, because they kind of bump into each other, and then he looks over at the carolers, and he makes some comment that he connects with, like, oh, okay, now that this person just arrived, they're doing a better job. I think we can rest assured that that is Lily.
Well, we don't know if it's Lily. It's not completely confirmed, but it's just
just like we know he ripped Santa Claus and took his hat, we know that's Lily. My interest is perked. I think, do you have any predictions of what you think might happen in the next episode? Do you have any guesses? Where did this last episode leave you?
Well, I think he'll eventually find her.
You think they'll meet?
I do think eventually they'll meet. Is it the next episode? I don't think so. I think hopefully if they do this show well, it strings us along until the very end, and they meet with magical realism at the end, kiss, have magic babies. Oh no, they're in high school. What am I doing? They shouldn't even be kissing.
We don't say the B word. We don't see babies on the podcast.
And they shouldn't be kissing either. It's high school.
If he can drink like he drinks, they can definitely kiss each other on the cheek. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
That's allowed.
Yeah.
It's Netflix after all. It's not Disney Plus.
Yeah, I think our bases were all pretty much covered by the end of high school. So,
So there's 8 episodes.
Like how Russ just changed the subject there? He didn't want to talk about that.
Well, just because maybe mine wasn't. Maybe all my bases weren't covered by high school, and now I feel embarrassed. I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Oh.
Maybe I had to wait till college.
Maybe you told me otherwise. We won't go there. I put that in your wedding song.
There's 8 episodes in the first season of Dash and Lily. You're guessing that they're going to meet eventually.
Eventually.
What episode will they meet in? Face to face, Sean. What episode are you getting? What's your guess? Episode what? Number
8.
Oh, so you think they're going to draw this whole charade across the whole season, and they won't meet until the 8th episode?
Yes, okay. I think there's going to be some sort of riff in the middle where there's a comedy back and forth in this book, and notes and clues and stuff, and you know she.
She what?
Nothing. What I can't say that because it's something from episode 2, actually. So,
did you watch episode 2?
You liked the show. Can we just wait till the ratings so I can say how I feel?
Here's my spoiler guess,
I watched episode 2, but that's all I've watched.
Okay, here's my guess.
So you can take whatever. Wait, what was I talking about?
No, because you're messed up now. So I'm going to guess that they're going to meet. You guess that they're going to meet in episode eight.
The last episode.
I'm going to say episode five. They'll meet by episode five. And here's another thing I'm going to guess, because I think you've hit on the whole comedy, classic comedy beat, is I think they're going to meet and it's going to be promising. But then who's going to come back into the picture?
Sophia is going to come back because she was in town.
Yes, and then there'll be a misunderstanding, and then Dash will be confused, and Lily will be sad, and then Dash will have to apologize and confess his love in a big dramatic gesture in episode 8.
And realize that he prefers a Lily over a Sophia.
Yeah, why wouldn't you? Lily seems fun. She did this whole cool romantic notebook game.
She looks like the girl from High School Musical, Jennifer Hudson.
Based on her outfit that you see the back of, she looks a little bit like a Punky Brewster. Like she's got her own style.
Soleil Moon Frye. I had the biggest crush on Punky Brewster.
Was that Punky Brewster?
Yeah, Soleil Moon Frye.
Sure. Yeah, just kind of her own. Woo! And I think Dash needs someone who's intelligent.
Why can't we talk about Punky Brewster for a second?
Do you want to talk about Punky Brewster?
Well, you could at least make a comment about it.
I have no memory other than she was playing in the dump and she locked herself in a refrigerator. And that was really scary. That's my only memory of Punky Brewster. Did that really happen?
I believe so. And after that, you knew never to lock yourself in a refrigerator. Thanks to Punky Brewster.
Don't play in refrigerators. I mean, not that. I think it was the old latch type refrigerators too. So I don't think they make those anymore. So you can push open a refrigerator door from the inside. Okay. In Punky Brewster days.
Okay, I got my Brewster fix. You can move on now.
You don't want to talk about your memories of Punky Brewster?
Well, just
don't leave me hanging. What? Tell me.
I don't know what to say. I watched Punky Brewster. She was awesome.
What did you like about her? Did you like that she had her own style? Did you like she kind of
Yeah, she was quirky and funky. Exactly. Yeah. She didn't take shit from anybody, man. And yeah. I hope that my daughters have some Punky Brewster in them, right?
Of course. And I think that's probably where, you know, Sophia, at the end of the day, Dash didn't connect with Sophia because she's probably just another one of those followers just doing, you know, too concerned about what she looks like or how she dresses. And Lily is that diamond in the rough. She's exactly what Dash needs.
I guess only time will tell with the magical realism.
With the magical realism.
With the wizards.
With the wizards. You're a wizard, Harry.
You're a wizard, Dash.
Here's my other prediction. Because there was the book called?
Use your
words.
Was it
the gay sex book? What was it? What was it called? The Joy of Gay Sex? What was the book in the library called? Do you recall?
Gay sex.
Yeah, The Joy of Gay Sex. And there was a really cool line, which I really appreciated, was because he was kind of caught red-handed by Sophia's best friend. And she kind of looked at, she looked down the book and looked back at him. And that could have been, I think the old school mentality of that kind of scenario, he would have been like, oh, it's not mine.
I'm not gay. I'm not gay.
Yeah. But it wasn't like that. He just owned it. And he had a nice little kind of remark he wanted his ex-girlfriend to know that he wasn't trying new things or what have you. But he without a beat, he took it in stride, which I appreciate.
There was no shame there. He was comfortable. He was comfortable enough. And Lily mentions that in some of her notes, that he was comfortable enough to stand there in the middle of the bookstore with a book about gay sex in his arm and be totally fine with that. That's the kind of guy Lily's looking for. So Dash is playing right into her plan. I think Dash is eventually going to be lured into some sort of dark alley somewhere, and Lily's going to be there with a mask and a knife on it, and she's going to jab him in the kidneys a couple times and be like, ha ha ha.
Whoa.
Shouldn't be so stupid looking at this. Shouldn't be so trustworthy.
Oh, this is a serial killer thing.
She's just trying to teach Dash a lesson, I think. That's my prediction. She's gonna shank him in an alley in episode 5.
That.
And then they'll meet in episode 8, and she'll be his caregiver in the. Yeah. Yeah. And they'll be like, oh, you saved me. She'll be like, Irene, I'm the one that actually tried to kill you.
Yeah. Like, and then,
oh,
the, and
this
then
is curtain. Magical realism. Sparkles. End scene.
And that is our episode, Dash and Lily.
Man, this shit is awesome.
You suck.
Do-do-do-do. Let's rate it.
Jarp.
Jarp.
This is our Jarp rating, where we break out characters, story, and interest, give them a out of 5 rating, and we score them up along the other series that we've reviewed so far. So I'll go first, and the first category is characters. And I gave this a 3 out of 5. I really liked Dash. I thought he was very charming. I enjoyed how he interacted with the world. And I feel like it's going to be a nice contrast with the upcoming introduction of Lily. I did feel there was a little bit, the peripheral characters seemed very two-dimensional. At least at this point, Boomer didn't have too much to him, but maybe there's a little bit more in the future. Even the Strand guy, the Strand character, the annoyed Strand character at the bookstore, he was kind of fun as well. So characters, 3.
2.5 for me. The show is called Dash and Lily, but I guess in this episode, we only get a dash of character.
Oh, Dash and Lily.
but he's got great hair. He's got great hair. His friend Booker, you know, he's trying to be the comic relief.
Boomer.
Oh, why
Boomer or Booker?
I don't know. I got Booker written here.
Okay.
It's probably Boomer. Right. I think you're right. It's Boomer. I must have just screwed up. Okay. Boomer, he's trying to be the comic relief here, but I don't find the guy that funny. Lily, she's got a cute voice, but then we see her and she's kind of like a poor man's Vanessa Hudson. My first impressions is she's really fucking annoying. She probably doesn't stop talking, she reads too much, and she's probably a little socially inept. So
who are you talking about?
Lily.
You're talking about Lily?
Yeah.
She's not even in the first episode.
Well, that's just the impressions. Whoa. I get from her jib jab.
And the fact that you've watched episode 2 entitled Lily.
The fact that I watched episode 2, Lily. So she's fucking annoying. Anyways,
whoa,
I'm just kidding. Settle down. I'm going to bleep it out.
Okay.
I'm not done. Overall, the story and text are driving me, but not the characters, not Dash. And these kids are unrelatable and disbelievable for high schoolers. I mean, they're not horrible. They're not great. They're just middle of the row, 2.5.
Okay. And next is story. I gave it a 2 out of 3. So though I enjoyed it, my concern is that I feel like it's going to get old fast for me. So I hope that they meet soon and there's a little bit more to this series than just the game. But I guess when I don't think about it and I don't like, it's very much like there's no real, again, magical realism. It's like the way he reads.
There's no wizards in this. Spoiler.
It's the way he reads the clue is very plot driven and not necessarily how one would read a book. So he doesn't read certain sections of the book because it doesn't work for the plot until the plot is ready for him to read the certain sections of the book. So there's a lot of that, but you kind of magical realism, leave it at the door and just have fun with it. So I gave it a 2 out of 5. Not bad, but yeah.
2.5 for me. You know, it's the old scavenger hunt for love. Was this what You've Got Mail was like? I don't remember. Was there a bit of like a...
No.
Okay.
Okay, sorry. I should say yes.
There's a bit of like a back and forth communication before they meet kind of thing. I don't remember.
So they don't. They've met in real life. He owns Chapters Indigo kind of guy.
And You've Got Mail. They met in real life.
Yeah, so so their characters meet, but they also have a relationship online, and they don't realize it's the same person.
They've got like online avatars. They use different names, and they're like their avatars online are falling in love, but their real life personas don't know it and
hate each
other. Right?
Yeah, and he's kind of like this bully book tycoon, and really, there's no reason why she should fall for him, but because he's Tom Hanks, she does.
A bit of yin and yang, kind of like Dash and Lily. I think they're opposites, bit of a opposites attract maybe a little bit here. Back to the story, it seems original enough with the book and the hints, but the whole I love Christmas and I'm gonna convert the guy that doesn't like Christmas, you know, it's been done, you know, I'm gonna, you know, the grumpy person that likes Christmas, I'm gonna convert them. We don't know
I didn't get that out of the first episode. I just feel like she was kind of setting the stage. Like, hey, you better like Christmas and you better like the joy of gay sex books and you better like this and you better like that. I didn't get the idea. But I guess to your point, you've maybe seen this next episode and he is definitely a bah humbug. So obviously he's going to have a change of heart. His heart's going to have to grow 2 times.
Now, does talking with a transvestite count as passing the Bechdel test? The Belky test?
I don't know.
If Lily talks with a transvestite about something other than a man, does that pass the Belky test?
Does he identify as a woman? I think that's the... So the
Bechdel test, the showrunners didn't dive in that far.
Okay. Well, if they get to that point, I think the Bechdel test, which is just for reference, to talk about the representation of women in film and TV, it has to be about two women talking to each other. They both have names. Their characters should have names and they should be talking about something other than men. If they identify as a woman, then I guess it would pass.
I think you need to find out rules and limitations on the Belky test here.
So last category for the JARP rating is interest. Are you interested? I gave it a 3 to 5. I am interested. It's cute. It's fun. I'm enjoying it, but I'm wondering if the whole Notebook shtick will last for me. But I'm definitely interested to watch more. And so are you, obviously.
Obviously. Hey, look, we actually align on one. I gave it a 3 as well.
Nice.
I thought it was cute. I didn't get the book references and I don't know the Joni Mitchell song, but the tasks and storyline were enough to keep me wanting to see what happens next. Did start to wean out near the end. So a good thing that the show is only 25 minutes long. I was wondering if he'll ever find the cool girl. And although he doesn't realize it, they've already bumped into each other and made eye contact. Does that universe connection work for you? Or would you rather they see each other when they eventually meet for the first time?
Wow. You're really reading that those notes there.
Yeah.
Was that a question?
I think so.
Okay.
I did go along and watch the second episode, but I did barely make it through it. Had I not watched the second episode, I would have maybe suggested that this is something you want to watch with your partner or spouse. You should maybe leave it to more of a last resort, however, if you can't find anything else.
Okay. You've watched the second episode. It sounds like you're not necessarily recommending it moving forward.
No.
I will definitely check out... I'm gonna commit right now. I'm gonna watch the whole series. 8 episodes, 20 minutes each. That's not bad. You can do it.
Yeah, you let us know.
Feel like you wanna throw up?
Okay.
Let's move on to temperature check.
Why? Why do we need to talk about the Liberator any more than we did? I just wanna know one thing. Did you go on and finish watching the rest of it?
No.
No. Did you watch episode 2?
No.
So
did you?
No. So we're going to stand firm. I think that goes to show we're standing firm on our rating and our review of it, that it's best left for other people.
I'll be back.
Oh, this is the part you were looking forward to the whole time.
This was the part I was looking forward to.
Yeah. So the Media Rewind is true romance. And I picked this because this was a fairy tale romance that really struck a chord for us at a young age. The 1993 film written by Quentin Tarantino, directed by Tony Scott, and starring, who wasn't it starring?
It only stars two people, but, you know, it had a huge cast.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. I when I consider stars, I think, like, who does the movie star?
Like movie stars.
But, yeah.
Okay, I think of headliners.
The movie stars.
I think of, like, the main character. You know, who's going to win best actor or best actress or both if the movie got nominated.
And it didn't get nominated for any Oscars, as far as I can tell.
Not surprised. Here's the thing. Not surprised. Like,
No, I guess not.
It's
you know who should have won an Oscar? The casting director.
The casting director, no shit, eh?
They should have won all the Oscars.
And how they were able to cram them all in on the budget that they had. The list goes on. Christian Slater, Patricia Arquette, Christopher Walken, Dennis Hopper, Gary Oldman, Val Kilmer, Brad Pitt, Michael Rapaport, Bronson Pinchot. I'm sure there's another cameo in there somewhere that I've missed.
Oh, yeah.
Tom Sizemore. Chris Penn. Sorry, it's not Sean Penn.
Chris Penn, yeah. Not the Sean.
Fantastic. Fantastic cast.
So here's something that, you know, both you and I will admit that we really enjoyed this movie, and I watched it prior to this podcast and I still loved it. It made $13 million internationally. It costed $13 million. This wasn't a big hit.
No.
It was a big, in my heart, in my mind, it was a big hit, but this actually, it actually didn't do as well as I thought it would have.
No. But, yeah. And I'm a little puzzled by that too. Maybe it just came out at a wrong time. I don't know, but we were right in the middle of our teenage years in this, and this movie couldn't have been more cooler than for us.
It was the right time for us. Oh, it was the wrong time for a lot of other people.
I guess so. But we thought, and I'm sorry, I am going to speak for you on this. We thought this movie was cool shit.
Yeah, 100%. And it to me, I appreciate this opportunity to look back on it, because to me, it's like drugs. Like, it's a lot of fun, but there's aspects that are pretty bad for you. But like, I watched the Siskel and Ebert review of this film, because I was like, what? It didn't make that very much money. And so this speaks to the fact that it was made for us. Ebert kind of talks about it. Well, you know, it was absurd.
Was he the fat one or the skinny one?
Ebert was the fat one.
Okay.
Ebert was the Ernie and Siskel was the Bert.
Okay. Tell me, what did the fat guy say?
So he said that it was absurd. It was kind of funny. He said there was an explosion at the movie factory. He said the movie was for teenage boys until they grow up with average intelligence. But it was very much like a stupid teenage boy fantasy. But he said it was fun. So Ebert was okay with it. He enjoyed it. Siskel, on the other hand, hated it. And he said it was disorganized, sloppy, and dumb. But that was the Siskel and Ebert in 1993.
I don't think
review.
It was disorganized at all. If you've read the screenplay and all that, it was a new style. It was, you know, Tony Scott did a lot of experimenting and new stylish things that weren't regularly seen. They are more so now. I think he was the frontier of a lot of this crazy stylistic cinematography and in editing that you see these days. Tony Scott started a lot of that.
Yeah, he was originally like an ad man. He did like I think that's how he got Top Gun, because they saw how he did like a car commercial and they're like, dude, you got to direct this plane movie.
But what I'm getting at is, I think, you know, a lot of this stuff was new and stylish and a little bit out there for the more traditional moviegoers and movie reviewers.
Right.
Siskel, the skinny idiot, being one of them. And so I don't. I'm not surprised that, you know, traditional movie reviewers like that didn't see the trend that this movie was starting.
And kind of skyrocketing the career of Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, speaking of differences, in the original script, Clarence actually dies.
Tony's the style and the theme that and the feeling that Tony made in the movie. I think Quentin said if he had done the movie, he would have still had Clarence died because his tone would have been completely different.
Yeah. I mean, they were obviously hoping for a lot more return than to break even on 13 on 13. But they probably went the safer way, thinking that it was going to resound with audiences a lot better than having the main protagonist die at the end. But now knowing that they didn't make any money off this movie, they should have maybe taken that risk and went ahead and let Clarence die and just thrown caution at the wind as far as, you know, their Rotten Tomatoes score.
Maybe. To me, I don't know. I think it was maybe too small of an audience. Like, again, it really hit home with young males. Maybe it just was too soon, but it holds up. Like, like people still really, I mean, it's got its issues, but it definitely holds up as a movie. But,
you know, I love those movies that, you know, you take a chance on, you go to the theater, you don't know nothing about it, and you walk out and you're like, man, that was fucking awesome. And you're so glad that you didn't know anything about it.
Yeah.
What movie would you say has that happened to you?
That just blew me away?
You didn't know much about it. You just went into the theater, watched it, and walked out, came out loving it.
Mad Max, Fury Road, baby.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Like, edge of my seat the whole time. I don't think I had ever really seen the original Mad Max, and I had heard it was kind of good. I wanted to go see it, and blew me away. Let me tell you what Siskel and Ebert were loving in 1993. They were loving In the Name of the Father, Daniel Day-Lewis.
Of course.
They were loving Philadelphia, Tom Hanks.
Of course. Okay.
The Firm was also out with Tom Cruise.
So it was a very serious year. No one was in the mood for this hyper, not hyper realistic, magically realism, just completely outlandish Bonnie and Clyde story, right? I guess just no one was in the mood for it. They wanted serious, 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 serious issues.
Well, there was
escapism.
Right. Well, there was Last Action Hero in 93, So I Married an Axe Murderer. So there was, you know, Robin Hood.
Bronson Pinchot,
Perfect Strangers.
This is great. You know, we grew up with him as Balky the...
Bartholomew?
Where's he from? I don't know where he was from.
Oh, gosh. That's
Bulgaria or something. Anyways, but he was, you know, Balky. I can't even explain Balky. Now, all of a sudden, we're watching him in this movie. Now he's getting blowjobs and snorting coke and running from the law. A bit of a role reversal here for Bronson Pinchot in this movie.
He is from the fictional Greek island of Mipos. Mipos.
Nipples?
He's
from Nipples.
Nipples. He's from the Nipples of Greece.
Bronson is or Belki?
Belki. Okay. Bartokomus.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, to me, and I even like rewatching this now, like I love him in this. I love Bronson in this movie. I think he does a great job. I probably at that time was going, why isn't this guy in every movie? Like, he's great in Perfect Strangers. He's great in True Romance. Why isn't this guy?
Where did he go? He was fantastic.
I feel like maybe he was like maybe a more of a live stage performer.
Did he go do Broadway or something?
Maybe the circus, or he did Dancing with the Stars. I thought he was maybe like a circus guy.
You wouldn't do the trapeze.
I feel like he was like a gymnastics kind of dude. The Hans Zimmer soundtrack, just the score with the xylophone stuff, like, just as soon as I heard that just went right back to 1993 for sure. Like, just some of the quotes, like, it ain't white boy day, and I like you Clarence, always have, always will, like,
I like you Clarence, like that. Always like, have,
yeah,
always will. This has been brought up a couple times now. I could see maybe like the really snobby traditional movie critics not agreeing with this, but the Dennis Hopper, God rest his soul, his monologue about the origin of Sicilian people, that has got to be one of the best monologues in cinematic history. Would you agree?
I again, it's the Christopher Walken, Dennis Hopper just working off each other in this small little trailer. It's directed so well. It's a brilliant scene as far as two actors just kind of just killing it. And obviously very very controversial as far as like the layers of racism in it, but
and the language,
just,
yeah,
and the language in it, but just yeah, it just, so enthralling, and just the fact that here's this character, Clarence's dad, who knows he's gonna die, and so it's like, well, I'm gonna insult these guys so bad that they're not gonna torture me, they're just gonna blow
yeah, it's my just head one off. One last fuck you when he knows he was gonna die anyways, yeah,
which is cool, like
it just takes some balls.
Yeah, well, the ex-cop, like, he just kind of, he knows enough, like, he's smart enough, he knows the situation he's in, he knows he's a dead man, so he might as well get to it. It's just that underlying of context, which makes it just so cool with these two actors.
Right.
I think it's definitely a scene that Quentin Tarantino is very proud of.
Yeah, I believe Tony Scott was very proud of it as well before he passed away.
Just the visuals. I thought Tony Scott did an amazing job. Like when, as soon as you're in Drexel's pad, like all like the memories of the lamp came flooding in, like all these things that just really stuck with me. And it had like this
smoke, fog, grime in there. Like you could tell that just the tobacco smell, you could just probably scrape it off the walls, you know? Yeah. And, you know, speaking of that, you know, Gary Oldman, amazing, amazing. He's one of my favorites, and just the range of this guy, but he acted alongside, Sean Penn in a movie called State of Grace about the Irish mob. Ed Harris, I believe, is in it as well. It's a really good mob movie. It doesn't get a lot of credit. And Gary Oldman is just amazing in it. He is just this sleazy, dirty, greasy, just Irish gangster, total loose cannon, and just great. I highly recommend it. State of Grace, if you've never seen it and you can find it somewhere, it's a great mob movie. It's a slow burn, but it's great.
I love it how it sounds like he brought a bunch of ideas and Tony Scott's like, yeah, man, go for it. I was thinking about the scar on my face. Yeah, do it, man. Looks
he didn't
dreads.
Even audition for the role. Yeah. He's like, what do you, what's the role? You know, I don't know how English just probably talks about.
What's the role? Yeah, yeah.
What's the role, Tony? And then Tony's like, well, you know, you're a white guy, but you think you're black and you're a pimp.
Yeah.
And he's that's, like, I think that's it. And then he's like, I'm in.
Yeah. And he didn't, and I guess he had his trailer and he could hear all these guys talking outside his trailer. And he went out and he's like, he just recorded, or he brought one of the guys in. He's like, and he just listened to him talk for a while and he just like created his character.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, pretty cool. Like I think it kind of just speaks to the, I don't know, just the kind of neat how this whole thing came together and just the energy that it probably had based on True Romance. Just a lot of actors being super excited to just be in like a Quentin Tarantino, Tony Scott vehicle. I think Tarantino's pretty cool with this one. I think he's less cool with Oliver Stone's take on Natural Born Killers. I think he was not happy with how that film turned out. But I think as far as his works being directed by someone else, he was okay with this one. But it is one. It feels like one of Quentin Tarantino's best films, even though it's one he didn't direct himself.
I think Tony Scott movies are a little timeless on their own. Are they not? He's got such a unique style. His silhouetted love scenes with the tongues flying through the air always, you know, and
yeah, there's a great love scene with Clarence in Alabama in True Romance. It's a good one.
Yeah, it is great. It's very reminiscent again of the Days of Thunder love scene, Top Gun love scene. I think if you were to put those all, very similar, looked very, very much the same.
You do. You have your own little love scene, Tony Scott, Spank Bank video that you watch.
Yeah, I've got a compilation. I'll send it to you on Google Drive when we're done here.
Okay, great.
Sounds good.
Our last segment is stargazing. Sean, what are you watching? What are you really digging right now? What are you looking forward to?
I finally finished The Queen's Gambit. Oh, yeah. Tears in my eyes. I friggin' loved it, man. Not that there was anything sad about it. I think I was just overjoyed with... what, you know, the character, her story, where she came from, where she ended up. It was just, I don't know. By the end of it, I just felt great for her. Great story, original, nice breath of fresh air on the Netflix. Wonderful. If you haven't seen it, believe the hype. We talked about it last time. I'm not going to talk about it anymore.
We have to spend at least a few minutes talking about Anya Taylor-Joy in every episode. That's okay. We're going to have an Anya Taylor-Joy segment.
So do we need to keep talking about it, or did I just fulfill it? Okay.
That's fulfilled. You fulfilled it.
What else did I watch? Just finished Interstellar again last night. Great movie. Mm-hmm. My manager was watching it. He wanted to talk about it. So I said I'd watch it over the weekend so we could talk about it tomorrow. And speaking of Christopher Nolan movies, I just finished Tenet. And it definitely took subtitles and headphones to even try and remotely understand what's going on. But I enjoyed it. I didn't love it as much as maybe some other Christopher Nolan movies, but I did enjoy it. And I certainly liked what it did to my brain. I sometimes like that complicated stuff. Really makes me think after whether or not I figure it out. Yet to be seen, but I like the thinkers, and that movie's definitely a thinker.
Yeah.
What are you watching?
We're both trying to watch the Tenet, and I had called you. You had checked in with me. You said, "Hey, you know, how did you get through the Tenet?" And I'm like, "No, I got to the catamaran part right after the catamaran part, and I just couldn't do it. I just had to stop watching. I didn't understand the rationale that all these characters were making, the choices were making. And I feel like that would be I have seen it. I moved forward. I watched the movie. And okay. That is the pendulum switch, right? Like that is the moment where like everything that you've seen is about to make sense. And I guess I think that would be my only warning for people. I'd be like, okay, watch push the full on. Hour.
Yeah.
Push on past the first hour is ridiculous on its own. And then you watch the remainder of the movie and then you're kind of like, okay.
It's as confusing as it is, things do make more sense at the end.
Yes.
And then you can go back and you can be like, okay. Yes. And it brings you to the ultimate paradox, which came first, the chicken or the egg.
Right. So I did enjoy it once I watched the whole movie. I did not, in retrospect, when I looked back and watched the whole movie, I did enjoy it. There is a lot of timey-wimey stuff that took me, that I'm still processing and will process for the rest of my life. But definitely, I agree. Not my favorite Christopher Nolan movie, but very fun. And would have been great to see in the theaters.
Now, do you think Christopher Nolan's really smart, or he's just really good at writing sort of smart sounding stuff and it's so fucking confusing that nobody questions him?
I think he's both. I think he's very smart and he's really good at writing smart things.
Now, with somebody that smart, you're thinking, I mean, I know why, because, you know, I was drawn to it, but you know, why a career in film production as opposed to
why isn't he saving the world?
Why isn't he being a doctor or a scientist or a physicist or something? You know, if you've got that kind of intelligence, why are you doing it, wasting it on filmmaking?
Because his passion is film.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I mean, I understand because I'm super duper smart and like I could be a robot maker, but instead I decided to be a podcast guy.
I hope this isn't your day job.
No.
What am I watching, you ask? Well, Sean, this week Disney dropped a whole lot of stuff on us.
You're on the Mandalorian still?
Well, I'm on the Mandalorian. I am quite enjoying the back half of Mandalorian season 2.
You would enjoy his back half.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Baby Yoda me. Disney just dropped a bunch of stuff because I subscribed right away, and I have been disappointed with the lack of new content of what I thought was promised to us in the beginning. I am enjoying the Mandalorian and have been since the first season, but they dropped a whole bunch of new trailers and teasers for WandaVision and Falcon and Winter Soldier, Loki.
No, are they out yet, or did they just drop the teasers?
They drop the cheesers. And the only thing that's coming out soon is WandaVision, and it's still probably a month away, and hopefully it doesn't get postponed again. But
I don't get that one. I don't know anything about it, though, but it looks different to me. Can you give me a bit of a Cole's notes on it? Sure.
I won't say I'm a Marvel super nerd, but it's going to introduce the multiverse a lot more than Doctor Strange did. So, and it's going to talk about how Scarlet Witch Wanda broke the multiverse to bring back Vision. So to have kind of this, she kind of created their own little reality where they could live happily ever after. But by doing that, I think she breaks something and everything starts to go sideways. But I definitely, that's my best.
Yeah, I just, you know, I've seen the trailers and I just don't get the whole I Love Lucy sort of angle on it. And that's,
I think,
and now you're getting at this is a universe that she's made where she can live happily ever after with the Vision.
Right.
Okay.
She's created a reality for them to live happily ever after. And because she wants this kind of picturesque life, but really I think it slowly comes. There's other characters that if you know a lot more about Marvel, that are going to be introduced in this series that kind of fight against that. And maybe that's why you start to see things start to shift. But, to me, the most recent, trailer kind of, I don't know, brought Stranger Things vibes to me. It just kind of, just the whole sci-fi aspect of something's not right here made me a lot more excited for that show.
I'll have to go watch the trailer. I'll be honest, that first trailer with the whole kind of I Love Lucy, Leave It to Beaver vibe on it, I didn't get it. You know, it was like, right. I don't understand this take in the Marvel universe, and it didn't really interest me, at least obviously not enough for me to even look into like what's this all about. But now that you've sort of given me the lowdown on why I've sort of seen that these Leave It to Beaver type images, you know, now it makes a bit sense, and now I'm more intrigued than I was 5 minutes ago.
Good. So. And that's my best guess. I could be completely wrong, but definitely go check out the new trailer. Check out the new trailer.
Okay, well, Russ, that was Dash and Lily. That was True Romance. And that was another review podcast. Thanks.
Thanks, Sean. Love you, buddy.
Love you too, man. Everyone stay safe out there.
Stay safe.
I like this. And-